Here, nothing is better than food or than drink. His soul may enjoy on his labor to think. And this is the thing that I also have found, this from the true hand of the true God inbound. For who can be eating, and who can bear fun? Yes, more so than I can bear under the sun. And that was Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 24 and 25 of the Word Green Version from 2020. Our daily scripture for today, little children. And I have made myself 3 belts now. I finished the belt that I began yesterday. It was this blue belt. I made the blue one yesterday. That's right. We have to make it bigger if we want to see anything here. Any kind of resolution or, So basically, the buckle is a very inexpensive buckle. Costs less than $1, I think, for the buckle. All the hardware together is about $1, including the Chicago bolts and the staples used to hold the belt loop on the front. So here, this is the belt, right? It goes into the belt loop after you put it through the hole. I like to make my belts with 5 holes, and I use the middle hole for my waist at the current time, and 2 holes on either side of that. That's the way I decided. I've been doing it that way because that's the way I decided was the way I would do it for right now. And on the back you can see the bronze colored hardware that I'm using, the Chicago bolts. Unfortunately, a lot of the bronze ones that I had didn't actually engage the thread well enough, so I had to select carefully to find ones that would actually be functional. But I've ordered some better or some more from a different brand of those. Maybe they'll be better. That maybe I can replace those if I want to. But the thing is, I've noticed my existing belts, I can cannibalize the buckles if I want from any of my older belts that don't fit me. But none of them have the same exact look as this. I love the look. They're too bright. The brass is too bright. This is a very dull-colored brass, you know, an off-color. I like that for this belt, especially for the fact that the blue is a very subdued color and the buckle's very subdued, and it's just beautiful. But this is a 1 1/4 inch belt, okay? So that's the same exact width as the one that I showed you before, the first one I ever made. So this was the second one. The blue one was the second belt I ever made, and this was the first belt I ever made. I did it using the gun black hardware on this one, but the same exact size, 1 1/4, exactly the same style of hardware, just one is bronze and one is gun black. And you can't even see the bronze, it's so dull in color, it's not even visible, which is actually what I like for this style of belt. It's really nice. But on the back you can see there's more of a silvery or gun black color on the Chicago bolts, or Chicago screws, I think they're called. But then I made, that was almost an accident, but it could have been bad. Okay, I dropped something, but it didn't fall all the way to the floor. Okay, look at this. So this is my third belt. This is the best belt I've ever made. This might be the best belt I've ever had. It's the third belt that I've ever made. Lots of extra length on it. It's made with the dark Sapici leather, which is Italian leather. And it's as thick as the blue one. They're both 3.5, I think, millimeters thick. They're both quite thick. I used the gun black hardware on this one. And, or did I? Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah, and so, again, the hardware is very subdued. You can hardly see it, depending on the lighting. And I love that about this. This is a 1-inch belt in width. It's not as wide as the others, so it's more versatile. It could be used as a dress belt, even. It could be polished if I wanted to. Polish the or make it look a little more shiny or something on the top. But I just cut this from a 1 3/4 strip, so I have a 3/4 inch wide piece, exactly the same leather, but not as wide, which probably is borderline. It might not be wide enough for my use. It might be suitable for my lady. If and when that happens, I could make that into a lady's belt, because it's 3/4 inch, which is more the width of a lady's belt. It's possible it could be used for a man's belt too, I think, in certain cases. But it's this very thick, beautiful, high quality Sapeachi leather. It has a beautiful leather smell to it. So I made the belt loop again using the same staples. Those staples are almost not long enough to go through this thicker leather for both this and the blue belt. There was a problem almost with the staples not being able to be long enough to go through. You only have to go through one thickness of the, here's my burnt finger bandage, but the staple only has to go through one thickness of the loop, because the two ends of the loop come together and the staple goes through from both sides. So, but it's, I made those quite quickly. So I now know how to make belts fairly quickly, I think. I made both those belts this morning in fairly short order. It's easier to make things when you're in the routine already and you've practiced it, so it's quite a bit easier to do things that way when you're in mode. And now in our article for today, we have chapter 2 paragraph 6, Fuxi and Kanji both invented Chinese writing. What I want to look up, something here. Okay. She means to be fond of, to be glad, to be happy. She, like the chi, I guess, chi, tai chi, and things like that. Maybe that's what tai chi is. Let's see if we look up tai chi. Is it spelled the same? Tai, no, that's a different chi. Yeah, I think, wait a minute, chi means boundary. Yeah, it's a different chi. It's not she. She means happiness, so fu shi means fu, happiness, and the meaning of fu means low-lying in Chinese, as we learn in this paragraph later on. So low-lying happiness is fu shi, one meaning, or one translation. And Kang Ji, as well as fu shi, both invented Chinese writing. So doesn't that seem likely then that it is logical to think they are one and the same person? They both invented Chinese writing, but their names are different, right? But so they're the same person with different names, possibly. The first dates in Chinese history begin with Fuxi, but it was during the reign of Huang Di, the Yellow Emperor, that is, that writing was created. Kang Ji saw a phoenix flying in the sky and was inspired by the uniqueness of the Pixiu hoof print, which the phoenix dropped. A Pixiu, it means literally panther in Chinese, so it was a cat. A cat's footprint was dropped by the phoenix bird in the Chinese mythology. And this inspired Kang Ji to invent writing. Writing, that is, he began studying the heavens, earth, and their details from that day forward. So that connects writing, at least Chinese writing, with the study of the heavens, earth, and so on. Kainan, by way of comparison, in the Bible, that Kainan and the Kainan written about in the Jewish literature is an inventor of astronomy, not from the Bible. That part doesn't come from the Bible, but it comes from, I believe, the Book of Jubilees or some other Jewish work like that would accompany the Bible, you know, but it's not the Bible. Now, Kainan, as an inventor of astronomy, had an earlier ancestor of the same name, who was also a writer. That's the Kenan, or Kainan, who was the descendant much closer to Adam before the deluge, the pre-flood Kainan, who was also a writer. After the invention of writing, the history was apparently extended back to include the two previous reigns in China. So this is interesting because it brings into question, when did writing first begin? For example, when Noah was on the ark, was writing invented already? And, you know, if so, did he have writings with him? Or if writing was only invented after the deluge, then how was the history from the time of Adam recorded? Was it purely by inspiration that Moses wrote these histories, or that somebody prior to Moses wrote these histories, but after the deluge? Or, and how, you know, how would they be inspired? It really, how could you be inspired to remember all these details about how old each person was without actually having been there, unless there was, of course, an oral tradition, which there could have been, an oral tradition also. Could have been passed on by word of mouth from person, father to son, and so on, mother to son, whatever. After the invention of writing, the history was apparently extended back to include the two previous reigns in China. And why we say that is because Kang Ji was the person working for the Yellow Emperor. Let's find out where that is. Hang on a second here. Kang Ji was a... I'm trying to find his title. Kang Ji? He was the something of the Yellow Emperor, right? So maybe I should look up the Yellow Emperor. Okay. Yellow Emperor. Right? The Yellow Emperor. Right. He was the official historian of the Yellow Emperor, Kang Ji, and he invented writing. But we also know that Fuxi invented writing, and Fuxi was the grandfather of the Yellow Emperor in our genealogy from the Bible. It fits with, therefore, the idea that Fuxi later on was called Kang Ji when he was the historian of the Yellow Emperor, and that he invented writing for his grandson and made the history extend back to himself when he was emperor. How common for inventors to come to fruition late in life. As we believed that Joseph's family history was written in the Greek mythology, and if you would like to read about that, it's in the article Joseph and Own. In that article, which is the article after Joseph, in the articles written by yours truly. You'll find the list of articles at the bottom of this article. This article is the arc of your archer, right? So it's got multiple parts, so you'd have to go to part two and look at the end of that to find the articles that preceded this one. And Joseph's family history was written in Greek mythology. We see all the correlations in the Greek mythology, even in the Roman mythology, between the Jewish family of Joseph and the mythology and that family of the Greek and Roman mythology. There's such a great correspondence that was given in great detail in the article Joseph and Own by yours truly. So you're more than welcome to read that article. But we'll come to that article probably soon. Maybe we'll do it next. I don't know. But so is Canaan's or Cainan's penned his history in the Chinese. Cainan's history is penned in the Chinese, and Joseph's family history was penned in the Greek mythology. So it's Chinese mythology, really, that we're talking about here, in which Cainan's history was penned, if we believe that Cainan is Kang Ji, which the name also suggests seems likely, and furthermore, the name Fu Shi, we just saw that Shi means happiness or something like happiness is one meaning of it, but Fu means low-lying in Chinese, and Canaan is lowland. Not sure what language Canaan is from, come to think of it, possibly from the Hebrew. Is it from Hebrew? I think it might be, because it comes from the Bible, Canaan. But we'd have to look into that some other day, I think. But the name Canaan, which is also a name in the Bible, so yeah, Canaan was another person in the Bible, wasn't he? In addition to Cainan, there was Canaan, who was... Let's look up Canaan. Maybe we can even find out. Was Canaan with two A's after the... Okay, after the N. The Canaanites, of course. The land of Canaan is also the land of promise. The promised land. We look up Canaan to go to the land of Canaan. But wasn't there a cursing of Canaan? Or something like that? Here it is. Yeah. Right. Canaan was the son of Ham. That's right. That's right. So that seems... If we look at that verse, maybe we can find a Hebrew version of it somehow, somewhere. If we got a Hebrew version of it, let's see. There's the Hebrew of that verse. And there it is there. So we're looking for the... There's the N. There's the two N's. So that's the name Canaan right there. So it's in Hebrew. That looks like that's the K. There's the N, and then the N at the end of a word, reading from right to left, is written with a long extender down, but it's the same as this letter here, the second letter from the right. Canaan. That's the name Canaan, right there. And does it appear again in this verse? So let's go back to the English. We're using the reference version. Where is it? Here it is. Right. No, the name only occurred once in that verse. So Canaan is a Hebrew name. And that concludes our study, except for this final sentence. Well, we see that Fu means low-lying, as Canaan means lowland, and Cainan is similar to Canaan. So the idea that Fu Shi could be the same as Kangji and that he could be the same as Kainan seems all the more likely based on the language or linguistic study of it. And so the final sentence reads in this paragraph, might Green family history begin with writing by 2737 BCE? That would be the year of the beginning of the reign of Shennong in the Chinese mythology or history. So Shennong being the son of Kainan, but also the important thing is there was a battle between Qi Yu and Shennong in the land of Shinar. So that battle indicated the time when the language was confused also, when the lands was divided and the nations were split up at that time also. So the 2737, which is actually 4 years after the dividing of the land in our chronology, which is in 2741, and the confusion of language in 2745 in our chronology is only 8 years earlier. So if this battle between, it's so close in time, we don't know if there's really anything valid about those 8 years, or whether the battle occurred much closer to the same time period as the dividing or confusing of the language or dividing of the land sometime after that. But the confusion of languages might be the time then when language was invented, you see. That would make some sense, that writing was invented at the same time that the language was confused in the oral form of it, because when you look at the original chapter here of Genesis chapter 11, all the earth continued to be of one language, it says, prior to the building of the Tower of Babel. But when you click on the footnote, it says, of one lip is one translation of that in the Masoretic text, as well as the Greek Septuagint and the Latin Vulgate. Of one lip. So it looks like an oral language. They were all of one oral language. So the beginning of written language at the time, perhaps, of the beginning of Shennong's reign, when Fuxi was just concluding his own reign, they weren't really ruling in China or in Shinar at that time either, were they? Well, we don't think they were, but maybe they ruled as patriarchs of the Jewish nation, and maybe they were the official rulers, and Nimrod was the rebel. So there are a lot of things to consider there. But before we run out of time, let's go and see if we can continue our viewing of the movie from 1972, The Expeditions or The Adventures of Thor Heyerdahl. This movie being called the Raw or Ray Expeditions. And we're on part number. We've had six, I think, so this is number seven.
It wasn't long before the local guides added a new attraction to their tours and a source of extra piastres. Among the first visitors were Heyerdahl's wife, Yvonne, and their daughters. There is one hazard Heyerdahl has not anticipated, a boat-eating camel. The more boat-like the bundles grow, the more tourists are attracted. It becomes impossible to work. Guards try to keep back the crowds from the fragile boat, but the people trample down the barriers, the bone-dry reeds snapping under their feet and disappearing for souvenirs. There is another hazard. Fire. Unfortunately, the guard can't read. Despite the danger of everything going up in smoke, they decide to work at night to be free from tourists. They have been at it for over a month, but in order to get to sea before the Caribbean hurricanes, they must launch within 2 weeks. One ill-flown spark will send everything up in flames, so they decide to stop the night shift. The men from Chad and their Egyptian helpers eventually strengthen the stern, but it is still a source of worry.
All the experts thought that the inward curve of the stern had only been intended by the ancient Egyptians as purification, and that the rope depicted by the wall paintings slanting down from the top of the stern to the deck merely served to retain the shape of the lovely curve. It was later to Costos Dili to learn that both this arc and the rope had an entirely different function. The arc, in fact, was supposed to serve as a spring, pulling the aft deck up. But no one knew that any longer.
As a result, neither Heyerdahl nor his experts make any protest when the boat builders from Chad insist on removing the rope, since the stern still curves up without it. The finishing touch is a thick cable which, in the ancient Egyptian manner, is to be attached as a kind of railing round the entire reed boat. Georges Sourial, who has just joined the expedition, knows of some potters near Cairo who still work as they did in ancient times. Heyerdahl and his consultants decide to have all the pots made here, everything needed for storing water and provision.
Okay. That concludes our viewing of that movie, The Ray Expeditions, from 1972, for today. So, let's resume whatever we were talking about here. So I feel like, yeah, I guess that's it for our study for today also. Everything is looking like we're on schedule here. But we've got a few minutes left. Let's see, we got about 3, almost 4 minutes left. Yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to talk about. But oh yeah, I've been trying the hydrogen water. Yes, the hydrogen water seems like it really may have something really real and significant about the benefit in drinking it. Because I've been working every day when I wake up, I feel like I want to get to work and do things, and I've been working, which I wasn't able to do before. I wasn't even thinking about that. You know, it seems like it's good for that. I don't know if it. I don't think it remove. I don't think it cures my arthritis or anything. My arthritis seems to be helped by getting and eating some bananas, as well as by the other vitamins like vitamin K2 that I've been taking. And always with dairy, I take vitamin K2. But vitamin K2 is absolutely crucial, I think, to health, with vitamin D, both together with calcium, and magnesium also. Magnesium, calcium, magnesium, vitamin D, and vitamin K2 together, all those, with boron, all those together, those five. But the hydrogen water, there might be something really, really significant about that, which is evidenced by all the people who claim that it helps, like the anecdotal evidence. And I mean, it's all well and good to say, well, we need scientific studies, or it's true. I mean, that's one way of doing it, that is to say, well, we can't believe the anecdotal evidence, but anecdotal evidence is very, very convincing sometimes and very powerful if many people are benefiting from something. And to ignore the anecdotal evidence can be fatal, essentially, you know, or foolish. So, but I've been noticing that the hydrogen water, and people just say that it's very, very significant to improving their health. There's something about dissolved hydrogen gas in the water. That's what it is. It's the dissolving of the hydrogen gas in the water. That's what it is. It's not, because of course hydrogen is in water, H2O. Water always has hydrogen in it, but it doesn't always have H2, the gas dissolved in it. And doing that, apparently, it has a wonderfully strong effect, a tremendous effect, which some people have noticed, and, you know, it's been seen by the improvements in people's health, which you can't deny, I don't think, with regard to anecdotal evidence. So, I'm also, apparently now I'm a belt maker, almost. I've made 3 belts. The 3rd belt is the best belt I've ever made, and maybe the best belt I've ever owned. I'm not sure, but we're just about at the end of our study now. And there's more things I'm still learning about the supplements and health. But I'll talk about that another time. That's the end of our study for today, little children. It's September 20th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 17:37 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now. Today we studied Chapter 2, Paragraph 6 of the Crucible. No, not the Crucible, the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express.